Discussing the energy transition with an expert, April 21, 2024. As we sat down to lunch in London's West End earlier this month, Richard told me his family had been good friends with Patrick Moore, presenter of BBC's The Sky at Night, from 1957 until his death in 2012. He was a passionate amateur astronomer who taught viewers what they were looking at in the night sky and contributed to early mapping of the moon. He spoke quickly and seemed rather eccentric. I remember watching his TV show as a young boy. The Horsehead Nebula, pictured, draws its red color from ionized hydrogen gas sitting behind the dark nebula. It's the type of shot Patrick Moore would have used on his TV show. Moore believed the sun's impact on climate was underappreciated and dismissed human activity as the driving force behind recent climate change. Perhaps he'd have a more nuanced view today. He was old enough to have met Orville Wright and later Neil Armstrong, connecting the two most defining moments in aviation history. Richard is a business development manager for a leading international energy major. He's responsible for developing the case for hydrogen imports to Europe and investigates investment opportunities for clean energy projects, part of supporting their developing energy transition portfolio. Richard has spent his career in energy, including with several European majors. In university, he studied climatology and investigated some of the ways in which volcanic ash and solar radiation can impact the climate. He reached out to me because of our blog. I always enjoy meeting our readers. Richard multitasks by listening to our blogcasts on his commute rather than reading them. He was able to leave the office for lunch during my recent trip. Every big energy company has an energy transition strategy. As shareholder-owned commercial enterprises, they don't have the luxury of accepting inferior returns to achieve politically correct targets. Renewables investments must compete with traditional energy for capital and other resources. Skeptics might argue that solar and wind projects provide political cover to focus on oil and gas where the real profits are. Richard is well-versed in the challenges of the energy transition. Like most people who have given serious thought to the topic, he believes we need to use much more nuclear. This blog often asserts that nuclear opponents haven't thought very hard about practical ways to reduce CO2. Richard noted that small cars lend themselves to electrification. We think they'll need to be cheaper than equivalent conventional cars to attain mass appeal because of the inconvenience of recharging. He believes hydrogen is a more practical solution for large trucks and long-distance transport because storing enough power in batteries adds too much weight to be economically practical. Daimler and Hyzon are actively working on liquid hydrogen trucks. The EU is targeting 10 million tons per annum of domestic hydrogen production, along with 10 million tons per annum of imports, to jumpstart region-wide consumption of hydrogen by 2030. The European Hydrogen Bank is providing up to 100 billion euros in support of these ambitions. Decarbonizing steel and cement production, perhaps with hydrogen, are priorities, although the technical challenges are significant. Europe has always seemed a better prospect for hydrogen than the US, where cheap natural gas renders the economics of hydrogen unworkable without substantial government subsidies. European politics is also to the left of the US, meaning there's greater tolerance for high energy prices in exchange for reduced emissions. Liquefying hydrogen prior to transportation makes it denser, allowing for more energy to be moved per unit of volume. However, chilling it to a liquid state is very energy intensive. Boil-off is a common problem for LNG tankers. Some of the LNG must be released in transit as it warms up and becomes gaseous. Boil-off losses are typically around 1% per day for LNG tankers, and shipping liquid hydrogen faces the same problem, but to a much greater extent due to the larger temperature differential. Hydrogen needs to be cooled to below minus 250 degrees Celsius. So many companies are looking at alternative means of transport, such as combining it with nitrogen to form ammonia, which is liquid at a much more manageable minus 33 degrees Celsius. In the U.S., carbon capture and sequestration, or CCS, received a boost in the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, which offers tax credits of up to $180 per metric ton for permanently sequestered CO2. Occidental is a leader in this. See how Occidental invests in lower taxes. Rock formations that previously held natural gas or methane can be good places to permanently store CO2. There's a wonderful symmetry in extracting carbon atoms as methane molecules, CH4, and returning them to their source after use as CO2. The Netherlands has identified storage capacity for up to 3.2 gigatons, more than the EU emitted last year. The Dutch Senate has now passed a law to end natural gas production at Groningen, one of Europe's largest, from October 1st this year to limit seismic risk from hydraulic fracturing. Groningen is not currently contemplated as a repository for CO2. Its closure leaves untapped reserves, and some politicians argue it could jeopardize the country's security of supply. Possible reuse as a carbon dioxide store is yet to be seen, but would certainly pose new challenges. The steel and concrete well casings through which natural gas was originally extracted can become corroded from prolonged contact with CO2, requiring the replacement of the installed materials. Hydrogen produces its own challenges when coming into contact with steel. It's a very small molecule, so it can penetrate the metal and cause embrittlement. Safely ensuring the integrity of former gas wells and pipelines, if repurposed for CO2 or hydrogen use, might prove too expensive, resulting in the need to drill or build new specialized infrastructure. There are likely better options. As is often the case, the biggest challenges in reducing CO2 are economic. Richard is well versed in these and other technical challenges facing the energy transition. I spent an absorbing lunch listening to him. We are fortunate to have people with his knowledge and ambition working on the problem.